All right, welcome back. We're watching the show ESPN 630, presented by Flight by Yingling. Raise the bar at the next generation of light beer. All right, let me welcome in my friend, colleague, Ben Standing from The Athletic. You can also hear on his podcast, Standing Room Only. Hey, Ben, how are you? Great to have you here.
Bram, it's a pleasure to talk to you now that I don't have to, I'm not going to see you on the regular. It's a great way to catch up.
Nice to catch up with you as well. All right, let's dive into it. I am willing to believe any scenario by which they acquire a quarterback. So what is your gut about how Washington gets their next quarterback at this point?
Yeah. So the other day, you mentioned the podcast, like I went through, like, Ron Rivera said, he didn't give us great detail, but he said, look, we're willing to consider anything, like you just kind of said. That includes people on the roster. That includes free agency, the draft, or trades. So I had a discussion, like, okay, let's rank these things. Week one starter, what's their ideal? How's it going to be? And for me, the trade is the play, is what I would say is the one they would want to do. That's because that's where the best options are. Free agency is just not that exciting. I don't think any of the players in free agency, your Teddy Bridgewater, Andy Dalton's, that's not moving the needle, let alone even being arguably any better than Taylor Heinicke. So I don't think that does much. The draft, sure, that's the easiest sort of way to go. But, you know, they've had back-to-back seasons under 500. I think there's a little bit of urgency, I would imagine. And, you know, they're picking 11. There's a few teams that are even picking ahead of them. So I don't know if that's ideal. That brings it back to the veteran market. And I don't know. We don't know if Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or any of those guys will be available, let alone be interested in coming here. But to me, that's where I have to imagine they're going to look. They tried to get Stafford last year. That was after a good year, right? Or at least a good finish. This is now where they are. I just feel like that's where this goes. That doesn't mean that we'll get it, but that to me is where I would think is they're putting their eggs in that basket right now.
Yeah, my gut says they're going to go hard and heavy to trade for somebody. And that if that fails, they will probably get a free agent. And I'm with you. Let's just say it's Mitch Trubisky. I think that perceptually, they're going to have to draft somebody with him for cover more than anything, because if they hitch their wagon to Trubisky, there's going to be a lot of naysayers early that go, we don't think he's very good. And if he ends up not being very good, I think they put their tenures in jeopardy. So that's how I think that they almost have to go gangbusters trade, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like I discussed this last year. I don't know. Maybe I was talking to my cat. I don't remember if I wrote this or said on my podcast or who knows what. But like when they went where they went with Fitzpatrick, to me, the one concern was even if things work out, then what? He's a 39-year-old free agent at the end of the year who realistically is probably not taking you anywhere close to contention just based on his history. And then where you at? You're kind of starting over. That's ultimately, you know, where they are, and you know you need to. And because they're coming off now a down season, even though it's the same amount of wins. What do you do? How do you turn this around? Look, in theory, Ron Rivera has he has a 5-year contract, and if you said he's got 3 years to play it out, sure, you could draft a rookie, give him some time to develop, let Taylor Heinicke or somebody else start, and then go from there. But I don't know if he has that time. I'm not even talking about the owner being you know, involved. I just mean this is just how this works in the league. Typically, you know, the timelines are moved up quicker. So it does feel like something needs to happen. And, this is the rub. And I think part of the discussion is it's not just like in isolation that Washington needs a quarterback. Lots of teams are in this boat. I mean, you could argue like 10 or 12 teams in the league will arguably be in the hunt for a quarterback. Carolina and Denver are two teams that are clearly aggressive. Pittsburgh is obviously saying goodbye to Ben Roethlisberger, and there's a bunch of other ones that could be in play. So that's the thing. Like, it's not just it's not great options, and there's a bunch of teams that need quarterbacks, and that's part of me that makes this very daunting.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and to your point, there's the aggressive teams. Well, we don't know what the ownership in Denver is, but I assume they're going to be aggressive, and then probably get Aaron Rodgers if he wants to go there. I agree with you about Carolina. It's a very aggressive owner. They're probably aggressively going to pursue somebody. And then there's people like Pittsburgh and New Orleans where I think you could argue more complete rosters where if you're a free agent quarterback or you're someone who's looking to go somewhere, you know, they've got a history of success that might be more attractive to you. That said, they do have this one thing, and I've asked a lot of people about it, and everybody naysays me that it will be a big deal, and I wonder where you fall on it. They do get to sell to somebody. You're going to be the first on a new brand with a new name and a new everything. Do you think that matters to someone like Russell Wilson or someone of that ilk?
I can't comprehend that that would matter a ton relative to, like, for people like Rodgers or Wilson who are already, you know, sort of etched their name into the history of this league. What matters is legacy. And by that, it means what's the end line? When it's all said and done, how many Super Bowls did you win or MVPs or whatever, where do you rank on various statistical lists? I think that will matter a lot. You know, so like I just, you know, maybe that could matter to somebody, but I just seems like that would be lower on the list. And that's the thing, like you just mentioned all those teams. If you have the option to go to these different places, not only is Washington not necessarily looking as attractive as those places from a football perspective based on how this year went, but that's not even in factoring in all the other shenanigans that go on around here. And that has got to scare some people off. So yes, you can, it is going to be a little bit softer this time because of the name change and the excitement that will come from that. But I just don't know that that's going to be able to outweigh all the other stuff that somebody might be looking at.
Okay. Let me ask you the other big question here, which was last year they did try to get Matthew Stafford. They ended up not paying the price that the Rams did. In fact, nobody was going to pay that price. They were the only ones that were willing to do that. And afterward, Ron Rivera said openly, we were not ready to give up the type of assets it was going to take to make that happen. This time around, he is, without saying it, we're willing to do what we have to do to get it done. So I think it's worth asking the question. Do you actually think their roster is ready to do what he's talking about? Or do you think he's just feeling the pressure to do what he's talking about? And he's saying, I have no choice but to give up what I need to give up, even if I'm uncomfortable with it.
Yeah. So this is the real question sort of the 2021 season, right? You know, things obviously went sideways pretty quick, but the question is why did that happen? I don't actually think it's lack of talent. I actually do think they have pieces. Now, look, if they lose Brandon Scherff, then that's taking away one of your better players. And, you know, we'll see what the roster looks like overall. But, like, you know, if Curtis Samuel is healthy, granted, that's the ultimate big if at this point. You know, if he's healthy, if Chase Young gets out of whatever funk he was in last year, and maybe to some degree, same with Montez Sweat, who obviously had a rough year on and off the field. You know, if those guys play at the level people expected, and you have a quarterback who can do some things that will, you know, only help a Terry McLaurin and so on, you know, I don't think it's inconceivable that they're going to be a pretty good team. I just think, though, the question is, like, what went wrong this year? How did it go so wrong? And, you know, what do you have to give up? I think all those variables are in play. I just still, like, you know, I think he's under pressure. I maybe I'm being a little naive, but I don't think it's – look, I think the NFL, most of these teams are sort of in the middle.
I agree.
The question is, do you find the right piece to put you over the top? Because so many of their guys are young and on the rise in theory, I think there is reason to be optimistic. But, again, getting everything to work, even if you get a quarterback, that's a whole other story.
Okay. So it sounds like you're kind of on the – you don't think Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson are going to end up coming here if they are indeed available and if they indeed end up going somewhere else. What about the Jimmy Garoppolos of the world? Do you see that in the future for Washington?
It's funny how, like, on Twitter over the weekend when he was playing the Niners game, I saw people calling him, like, the hot Kirk Cousins. Because it feels very much in terms of the type of quarterback you're at. And this is the thing, right? Like, in the NFL, like Ron Rivera has made the point after they didn't get Stafford to say, hey, look, if you build up the team around the quarterback, look at some of the guys that have been in the Super Bowl recently. And whether I don't know if he said Garoppolo outright, but look, Garoppolo did make the Super Bowl, as did Jared Goff, right? And Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. But the next sentence is, and it was not sustainable, right? Like, things had to work so right for those things to occur that then they became not sustainable. And the Rams couldn't wait to get rid of Goff. The Niners traded way up to draft another quarterback, even with Garoppolo around. So it's not that Garoppolo, in theory, wouldn't be an upgrade over Taylor Heinicke, or at least give you the potential for an upgrade. It's what's the ceiling still? Are you real? I mean, right now, San Francisco looks like a better team than Washington. So if Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, look, they did beat Dallas, something Washington couldn't do. So kudos to him for that. I just don't know if he's, maybe he puts you more in the mix, but I don't know if it puts you all the way up where you want to go, especially when the defense didn't look anything close to a top five defense this year. That would have to change dramatically. And then you still have to try your best to not lean on Garoppolo as much as you probably need to for what these quarterbacks mean these days.
All right. I have one preposterous one. I don't even know why I'm saying this to you, but I will, because I have one that I actually think might be a possibility dependent on who the GM in Chicago is. But Russell Wilson on the list initially for him last year, Chicago was on it. Now, granted, they ended up drafting Justin Fields, and you'd think that, you know, that they have moved on, but I'm going to guess we don't know the answer to that until we know who the GM is. And Deshaun Watson's had the door closed on him in Miami, and therefore his future's way out in the ether. Like, where's he going to end up going? So if Chicago gets interested, I got a funny feeling that Washington would, should, and could try to poach Justin Fields to come here. And it probably would cost them less to give up some assets to allow Chicago to acquire the bigger name. But that's my preposterous one that I've got out there right now.
So, right. So this, you know, this brings to the question of, you know, when you drive the car off of the lot, it loses, yeah, automatically loses some sticker value. The question is, how much has Justin Fields lost? Not just because he played a year, but, you know, kind of didn't look overly impressive. Now, I'm not saying that means he's a bum, but of course not. He's a rookie quarterback. I would never play first round picks if I could avoid it, because I just think these guys get thrown into the fire way too soon and they're not ready. But at the same point, there were questions about him, you know, obviously to a degree, and, you know, he didn't do anything that exciting. Are you better off staying at 11 and just drafting somebody there? Now, none of these quarterbacks in this draft have the, or, like, they would all be ranked below almost all the quarterbacks that came out last year, I think. So
yeah,
there is that, but you'd also get him on a rookie, you know, from the first year on and things like that.
You'd get a rookie deal, and I'm only saying it because in the film I watched of him, you know, the times that they ended up playing one of our opponents, I actually really liked him. So that's why I'm putting his name out there, that if Chicago gets weird and brings in a whole new group of people, and they decide they want to go try to land one of these massive names, and they need assets to do it and need either a third team or are going to flip Fields, call me interested on that one. And that's why I'm, you know, out talking about things that are never going to happen.
But, you know. Well, I mean, but that is sort of the larger point of what needs to happen. Like, we're looking at the landscape right now, and it's hard to see too many. I'm not saying that there's no options, but it's hard to see how there's not many options, and how does Washington get involved in there?
Right.
And then you're going to need something like this to happen. Like, even like Stafford last year, I don't think people were just definitively discussing him getting traded when the season was ending, but a few weeks later, things got excited. So I think that's what kind of needs to happen. Something we're not seeing today has to spring free in order to create enough dominoes for Washington to have an easier path to get somebody.
Yeah, I agree. All right, you mentioned Chase Young. I want to get your thoughts on him. Here's what I heard. Tell me if you think I'm hearing it wrong. Ron Rivera says, I want you to show up to things, not just because, like, you know, we want you there, but because we actually want you to be a team leader and your presence matters. And Chase Young saying, I'm not sure if I'm showing up there, sounds, I don't know, in that category of where we were at the end of the summer when Ron Rivera was vaguely using the word maturity. Where are you on Chase Young and what's going on here between him and the coach and the team?
I think this is a concerning moment, for sure. I'm not saying concerning like it's a disaster, but I do think, you know, we talk so much about what a player can do on the field from a physical perspective, but, you know, there is the the maturity word to go where you just went. I agree. Ron Rivera was sort of pointing at Chase Young every time he said, talk about maturity and discipline, that they needed more of that. There's a lack of urgency, it feels to me, in Chase Young's comments. Now, he's still a very young guy, and he's 20, he's going on 23, and feels like he's sort of a little bit younger than that to a degree. He needs to, I think, figure out what are his priorities. And just to be clear, like, again, he's very talented, and there's, if you're optimistic about Washington going forward, he's a very big reason. But yeah, I mean, when you're like the only guy who skips all of the offseason workouts, and you're a second year player in the league, and then you have the year that you have, and then even during the year, you're kind of not really discussing, you're not talking about things from a sense of urgency. And then when we talk to you at the end of the year, after the team seemingly got better on defense, after you went out, you're not really, didn't seem like he seemed to recognize that to a degree. And then he says he's not definitively showing up for the offseason workouts. I think it's a little concerning. But again, he's young and there's a lot of room to grow on and off the field. So it's not a disaster, but I think Ron Rivera would probably be concerned. And I would say there's reason to be, because until Chase Young starts doing the things that you expect out of a star player and a leader, you got to wonder, you know, are we going to see some version of a repeat of this year?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm hearing is Rivera say, and this is meant positively, like, we want you to be a leader here. We want your presence felt. The young players are going to look up to you. You're the star. You need to set the standard here. Even if you can't practice with your injured knee, you need to set the standard here. And I'm not seeing that. And I'll hear voluntary till, you know, forever, but for some people, it kind of isn't. And he's one of those people, in my mind. It's not voluntary. We need you to be the face of the franchise. Please be it. That's what I'm hearing, you know, from him. And also,
to that end, if a 10-year veteran, like, or whatever Trent Williams was by the end, minus all the controversy, if a guy like that said, hey, you know what, I'm not showing up, okay, we get it.
But yeah, I need a break. I hear you. My body needs a break. I hear him. I hear him. But you know what you're getting year after year from Trent Williams. I agree with you. You know what you're getting.
Right, and plus Chase Young's only a second-year player regardless of anything else. It's not like, you know, he obviously had a very good rookie year, but, like, he's still learning and developing in his own right. And also, this is also what makes Terry McLaurin such an important piece and conversation, because it isn't just that he's a very good receiver. He seems to get all these other components. And he is what you point to and say, do what he does and we'll be good. And people are their own people. Chase Young and Terry McLaurin seem like very different guys. That's absolutely great and fine. But that's what, like, especially if you're a guy like Ron Rivera, not every coach may do this way. The McLaurin is what he's looking for. And he needs Chase Young to sort of get a little more on board with some of those dynamics. Again, a very talented player. Like you said, the goal is to have him be the leader, not, because he's going to be important for this group.
I mean, like, he compared him to Cam Newton. I thought it was pretty apropos. Like, they're kind of larger than life people. And at some point, though, they have to embody the brand and want to be the brand. And Cam turned into that. We saw that in real time when we went back there for the homecoming thing. What he meant to that franchise, even if he could no longer play that way any longer. And that's what he's asking of Chase Young to become for them. Because, like, John Allen is doing this. He is embodying all of it. He is setting an example. But no offense to John, he doesn't resonate the same way. Chase Young will always be larger than life. And if he's not the one setting the standard, they're going to have a problem, really. I mean, they are.
I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree more. I mean, and it's definitely, again, relatively speaking to all the things we talk about this organization, Chase Young's comments are not that high on the list of concerns. But when he said he was, you know, still to be determined how he was going to handle his offseason, you know, that definitely felt like a, whoa, really? Still after what
really?
Went through this year? That was a little concerning.
Yeah, and nobody's trying to take opportunities away from him. You know what I mean? Like, you got a commercial that's going to pay you $1 million. No one's going to stop you from doing that, okay? Nobody is going to get in the way of you doing something like that. All right, two quick things, and I'll let you go. Jamin Davis is not going to play the position that they intended for him. They're going to find a middle linebacker one way or the other. I think we know that. If Landon Collins is back, where does he fit in to all of this moving forward?
Where does Jamin Davis fit in?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and not just that. Like, so Landon Collins, whatever he is, I would imagine they still think they probably need to get a Mike linebacker, right? Like, that's kind of what they're
no doubt.
discussion is. So if they do whether that's a good draft pick or a veteran, you know, right now Cole Holcomb is ahead of Jamin Davis in terms of being an outside backer.
That's right.
Maybe that changes by next year if Davis develops. But yeah, that could put him in the position of being the third linebacker for a team that plays sub packages the majority of the time. And that's why I think what Ron Rivera was saying, that they're going to look at maybe not using Jamin Davis at Mike, and I'm sort of soft peddling that. He really didn't sound like he was going to. Then this is absolutely concerning, unless he supplants Cole Holcomb, who, you know, he's been pretty solid and obviously been a good player, but maybe he lacks some of that dynamic upside. But yeah, I do think this is a big question for sure of where this is. And the fact that as we're doing, you know, draft and offseason previews, that linebacker would be pretty high on the list. Once you get past quarterback, it arguably is number two on the list. I think that's a bit of a problem, considering you just spent a first-round pick on a guy.
Yeah, I'm convinced they're going to spend money in free agency on a middle linebacker. Like, I'm convinced of that. And then we'll see what happens with Landon, and then we'll see what happens with Davis. I think it's an interesting thing to play out. All right, last thing, and I'm just wondering if you're hearing anything. Have you heard anything about the stadium? Is anything kind of crossed your radar about what's going on there?
Not in particular. I mean, obviously there's been, you know, the governor of Virginia is talking a bit more now about the stadium now that he's, running the show. And obviously Virginia, you know, it feels like it's the most aggressive of the three places right now, because it feels like it has the most reason, I guess, to be aggressive. Maryland's trying to figure out how to hold on, but where would you even put a new stadium, I guess? And D.C., obviously, it's all about RFK and whether that's even an option, which for now doesn't seem like it is, but I think most people kind of hope that it is. So I haven't heard a ton beyond that, at least nothing that I could say like with any real sense. But yeah, there's always, that is, once we get past the name here, that is the big story out there. But what about you? What are you hearing?
I mean, after hearing Glenn Youngkin say, you know, unprompted in his State of the State address taking office, that a priority is to do this, change the stadium authority thing to allow for a football stadium to be built, I went, well, that's rolling downhill. So you tell me, is it in Prince William or Loudoun? I mean, that's what I'm hearing, you know, but I don't know. You know, I don't know.
To me, I mean, and maybe this is my Maryland bias, but I just feel like, to me, when you're looking at this thing in totality, if you put the stadium in Virginia, any fans that have been like hanging on that live in Maryland or maybe even D.C. are like, you know what? Maybe not D.C., but like Maryland, they're like, you know what? Baltimore is not that far away from where I am now. And if I got kids, do I need to deal with this organization the way things have gone? Or we can just go that way. And I think if he goes the other way, if you leave the stadium in Maryland, I don't see where Virginia fans are going. So it just feels like, to me, putting it in Virginia is potentially a long-term mistake. But again, obviously money and all these other things are going to lead the way here.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to see. All right, Ben. Hey, thanks for coming on today. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man. See ya.
All right, it's Ben Standing, who you can read in The Athletic and hear on his podcast, Standing Room Only. All right, Chris Miller next. Brady Watch the Show, ESPN 630, Sports Capital. Brady Watch the Show, ESPN 630, presented by Flight by Yingling. Raise the bar at the next generation of light beer. All right, in the 3 o'clock hour, if you missed it, I had a chance to catch up with Chris Miller from NBC Sports Washington as we caught up at the midway point of the season with the new look Wizards. So here was that conversation with Chris Miller. It's been a while, Chris. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming on today.
Happy New Year, Bram. Yeah, it's been a long time. You know, you've been busy calling games. It's good to talk to you.
You too, which I want to talk to you about in a minute. You know, I want to start here, though, because I think you and I are both, we kind of got similar jobs. I think we're both, at our core, eternal optimists. And yet the teams that we're associated with closely don't really often give reason to be overly optimistic about runs, but I regenerate it every year. And this team that you have here is certainly new in the way that it's constituted. So as they sit at 23-21 today, what is your feeling about the trajectory of where this thing is going?
I think they're a playoff team. I think they could potentially even be a top six playoff team, which means you don't have to worry about the play-in tournament. The way that they played yesterday against Philadelphia gives me that confidence, because that team yesterday looked like the 10-3 start team. that team that was 10-3 at the beginning of the year that shocked the entire league. They played with such joy on both ends yesterday. And, what, six or seven guys in double figures. Bradley Beal didn't even have to score 20. They really dominated the game and let Joel Embiid get his points, but really stopped everybody else. That gives me hope that, you know, this could be a really good team. And, Bram, that was the first game all year that everyone was available to play. Think about it. That was the first time they were a whole team. And, oh, by the way, they were down to their third-string head coach. I mean, it's just whatever could go wrong, like with COVID and all this other stuff, has gone wrong. But yet, this was the first time that they were all looking at each other going, oh, hey, I'm Bradley Beal. Hi, I'm Rui Hachimura. Hi, I'm Davis Bertans. Hi, I'm all could play, and all available to play at least.
So the on the came out gangbusters had a total course correction to recently and yesterday, where there are examples of there can be really, really good. Are you kind of looking at the inconsistency based on availability, or is it something else in your mind?
You know, again, this has just been just a weird year. Shocker, right? It's just, you don't know who's available, Bram. When you go into, I don't know what it was like for you guys with WFT, just how like the NFL kind of deals with it, because I'm just not in that world every day. But just every day driving to the arena, you just don't know who's available. And it's permeated itself to the coaching staff now, where you've got Joseph Blair coaching for the first time. The game before that, it's just crazy how many scenarios can happen because of health and safety protocols. So I kind of look at this year as, if you can just get whole, like the last 20 games of the regular season, somebody's going to pop out and you go, oh, they're going to be a tough out. And I think that could be the Wizards.
I agree with you. Okay. Let me go back to the beginning of it, which is the trade. I would argue, unless you can correct me, this might be the greatest trade the Wizards have ever had. I mean, am I wrong? I'm not sure they've ever gotten over on somebody the way that they got over on the Lakers here with this.
I thought Ernie's deal to get Caron Butler for Kwame Brown was pretty damn good.
Yeah, okay. That's true.
You know, like I'm like, well, hey, look, another Wizards-Lakers trade, right? I thought getting Caron here kind of put the Wizards, you know, obviously they had those three straight years where they lost to LeBron and the Cavs, though, but to kind of convince L.A. to take Kwame Brown off the Wizards' hands and to get an all-star in Caron Butler, that was a pretty good trade. But this one has the potential because there's so many people involved, right? I see why you say that, because it's like the Wizards got KCP, who is a really good defender and has been consistent really all year long. They get Montrezl Harrell, who could start, and he was the third center off the bench last night, and he had the most energy. And then they get this guy, Kyle Kuzma, that now all of a sudden people are talking about most improved player in the league. So I could see how this could be considered maybe one of the best trades, because you gave up a Hall of Famer, yes, and Russell has really struggled in L.A., but the pieces that you got back are all contributing at a high level to this team.
Kuzma's a stud, too, and I was concerned just on the trade. What I was concerned with, not that they didn't do the right thing, obviously they did. I mean, it's clear. I was concerned, like, they're getting a bunch of guys who just played on, like, a championship-level team. Now they're coming here. It's all Wizards bra, this whole thing. I wasn't sure they were going to be pumped about this. And from the jump, it's as if they were. So can you kind of take me through just the beginning and, hi, I'm him, he's me, blah, 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 right. And let's play together and see how it goes.
Well, I think when you come to a new situation and you can put your ring at the center of the table, you get instant gravitas, right? You get instant credibility because you were the last team standing. And I think for Kuz and KCP and, you know, even Trez won a national championship at Louisville. That means something in this league. And then you get a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, who was a 20-point scorer in Brooklyn before he tore his ACL, and he's got something to prove. And they all get kind of this opportunity to start anew. And Kuz has said it several times. You know, those first 2 years he was in the league, I think people forget this. This kid was like an 18-point scorer. I mean, he was good. And then LeBron came there, and that kind of changes the trajectory of his career, because now you've got to kind of take a backseat to LeBron for obvious reasons. And then Anthony Davis comes. So he learned a lot of championship habits from LeBron, and now he applies it here. He actually plays like him at times, where he just gets the ball off a rebound and just sprints down the floor downhill, and he lowers his shoulder and he can get a lay-in. I'm like, oh, I've seen that before for about 20 years. So this is just a new opportunity to come here and kind of spread your wings. I've been saying that about Kyle really the last couple of weeks. This is an opportunity for him to remind people who he was when he first got into the league. And now I think he's the second best player on the team. I've said that
for weeks. No doubt.
He just continues to prove me right. And, you know, that dunk he had on Embiid last night was a signature moment in the Wizards uniform, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, just over and over, we constantly do this with the top-heavy star, which is now, it used to be Wall and Beal, now it's Beal. And we go, well, who's the complimentary guy? Kuzma is. Like, he's a keeper. Like, he's total keeper. Like, I love this dude. Like, the fact that we got more than just him for Russ is actually amazing to me. Now seeing him play the way he's been playing here the first half of the season so far.
Truly remarkable. And he's a double-double machine too. He's rebounding. And, you know, the one thing that Wizards fans can see right away is his clutch performances. Corner three in Cleveland, corner three in Detroit, huge shot at home against Chicago, but, you know, DeRozan obviously hit three to win it, but Kuz hit a big shot before that. This kid is kind of put out there for everyone to see that when it's those clutch moments, he wants all the smoke. I mean, like, he's not deferring to anybody. He's like, I'll do it. And that's what's kind of been like the huge revelation for me. And he just really embraces the moment. He's not afraid, Bram. Like, he really wants to be the guy to close the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. All right. So how's Beal dealing with all that? Like, does he care? Does he care who wins the game? Does that ever bother him?
I mean, I think at this point, year 10, I mean, the guy just wants to win. I mean, that's kind of been his mantra, really, why everyone was trying to put him on a new team, right? He wanted to fill out his change of address form for the last two summers. All he has said is, I just want to win. So if that is a part of winning, is maybe deferring those closed moments to somebody like Kuz, who's clearly embraced that, then so be it. Again, last night I thought yesterday afternoon, he started the game very aggressive offensively. And then he kind of just blended into the game. And then that's why you got multiple guys scoring in double figures, is everyone was kind of shining. And I said last night on the postgame show, if you eat and I eat, we all eat. So everybody's happy. Everyone's been fed. And I think that's kind of like what the Wizards looked like yesterday.
Yeah, but you know that the egos take over at some point, you know, and the stars are the stars, right? Right. At some point they go, all right, you know, like, stop telling me Kyle Kuzma's the greatest player, you know, on earth. Like, you know how this goes. That's why I'm wondering, is he okay with this, the way it's going?
He has to be, because if everything was about winning, then it doesn't matter how you get to that end destination as long as you get there, right? So that is using his words against him then. If it's about winning, then does it matter how you win? To me, until I see or hear otherwise, winning is winning. It just matters how you get there.
Yep. I saw, what was it, the other day, I think it was after the Portland loss maybe, where the Wes Unseld Jr. said something to the effect of that we think Beal and Dinwiddie are too deferential at times. Do you agree with that? Like, as they try to figure out how that backcourt works?
Yeah, this thing is a work. It's a work in progress. These guys are too good when the other one's not on the floor. Well, I'm trying to figure out, well, how can you be the best version of yourself together? And I think that's just going to kind of take time. And the one thing from Brad's perspective that I can understand this is, you know, for his entire career, he's played one way. And it was the elite of the elite fast point guard. Right? He had John for 9 years. He had Russ for 1 year. So, I mean, it's like, well, he had John for 8, Russ for his 9th year. And he was used to kind of filling the lane. Well, now, the Wizards aren't the number one pace team in the league anymore. They're towards the bottom when you think of pace like that. They're more, let's be more efficient in our offense. So he has to get used to that. That's just a different type of way they play. It would be like the equivalent in the NFL of you being a run-and-shoot team where your quarterback is throwing 65 times, and then all of a sudden you go into an offense where you're handing the ball off the first two times, and then it's third and two, and then you throw a slant route. That's kind of like the equivalent of what Brad is kind of dealing with the type of offense that they're running. So I think it's just a work. They just have to continue to work on it. But it is something that is in everyone's eye now where they can see it, like, oh, Dinwiddie averages like all-star numbers when Brad's not playing, and then Brad has become a really good facilitator when Spencer's not playing. So how do we get those two things to work in concert together?
Yep. All right. So what do we got? About a month till the trade deadline? This is round two for Tommy, you know, like, I mean, he won round one with that rush trade. Right. Round two is, what do we do here? And I'm looking at listen, I love Montrez, you know, but I don't know. You think they're flipping him in the next month to a contender?
You know, it's funny. I asked Tommy this last week. I said, this might be a little bit unusual than most trade deadline rounds because, again, as I said, yesterday was the first time that this team was whole. By virtue of normal seasons, you would know who you are. Oh, we're this. We need this. We're really good at this. We need to improve here. I still don't think they know. They might know who they are. But how would you if you've never seen the whole team together? So I know we're getting – it's under a month. I think it's February 10th, the trade deadline. I would want to see this group play about 10 games. Like, can we speed up, like, what they would look like? Because last night, Bertans doesn't play. Denny comes in late. Aaron Holiday's been in and out of the lineup. Kispert's minutes are improving. You've got to integrate Rui and Thomas Bryant. And now you got this three-headed center thing. How is Montrez going to handle that? How is TB going to handle it? Is Gaff still a starter? So there are a lot of question marks for me, Bram. So I don't know how you go into the trade deadline figuring out what do you need to improve the roster.
I agree, but he's also on an expiring contract, and I'm sure there are plenty of contenders looking at him going, he can help us big time, and they're going to be willing to give something. So you got to make that decision now. You do.
Yeah, and I think with Thomas Bryant coming back, it kind of makes that decision a little bit easier because Thomas is – a different player, right? He can actually spread the floor and shoot from the five position. But damn, Montrez's energy yesterday and his energy normally is something that kind of helps the team, right? So unless you don't think you can afford him in the summer, then yeah, maybe you have to flip him. But I leave that up to the front office. But I look at this team, I'm like, I need to see more.
I agree, but I'm just sitting there going, clock's ticking. You already gave Gafford money, so I don't know what the score is here. All I know is it ain't adding up. So at some point, you're going to have to make a decision you might not want to make. That's all. You know, like,
and that's what happens, I think, with the quality of depth. Now you really do have 12, 13 players legitimately that have an argument to why they should be playing.
Yeah.
So now it's like, okay, well, I know who my five are, but you know they're going to be two or three guys every night that I don't want to say pouting, but they're upset they're not playing. And like you said earlier about egos and massaging that, Wes has said, listen, my door is open, but I mean, I can't play everybody. So there are going to be some nights. Again, I thought Aaron Holiday, those three DMPs, coaches' decisions, I thought he was professional as heck that fourth game when he came in and played all 12 of the minutes in the fourth quarter. So that told me, oh, and he scored 10 points. I was like, oh, he's a pro because he handled the three games he didn't play. And then that fourth one, it took the fourth quarter for them finally to play him, and he went in and he was productive.
Yep. Early in the season, he was good, too. I like that guy. All right. Yeah. Two quick things, and I'll let you go. I didn't know we had a Globetrotter on the coaching staff till yesterday when I saw all the clips. I don't know how that didn't get out, that we had a Globetrotter on the coaching staff.
A 6'10 Globetrotter also. Joseph Blair, 6'10. He's got a great handle. I don't know if you saw the video after the game where he was doing the basketball, you know, tricks and stuff. Pretty cool, man. All you got to do is sometimes. You know, now I've learned a lesson. So anytime someone new comes to town, I'm going to ask him, you ever play for the Globetrotters? Or yeah. Do you have any tricks?
Well, I think it's very rare that the coach walks into the locker room and can make all the players go, oh, my God. that's a rare one. Yeah, that's a rare one. All right. Last thing. All right. You got to tell me what's going on. You're calling games. Everybody's calling games. What's going on over there? What is happening?
Yeah, man. Health and safety protocol, brother. We got to be careful. Oh, man. It's weird, man. This year has just been – you just got to be ready. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody's in and out. You've done a great job. I've seen you call a couple games. You've done a great job. I know you. I know. I'm sure you're enjoying doing that. I know. You don't want to step on anybody's toes, but I know you've done a great job, and I'm sure you've really enjoyed it. So
I appreciate it, my friend.
I'll leave it at that. All right, Chris. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for making the time today, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Good talking to you too, man. Happy New Year to you and your family. We'll talk soon.
You too. All right, that's Chris Miller from NBC Sports Washington. All right, we'll take a quick break, close up shop next. Brad Weiss, I show ESPN 630, the Sports Capital. All right, welcome back. Jerry Brewer had an interesting piece in the Washington Post today where he was basically questioning, is there just too much in the NFL by expanding to 14 teams instead of 12, where there's now a 2-7 game and both were blowouts over the weekend. And I think sports toggles with this all the time. The 16 teams in the NBA playoffs are too much. 8 seeds and often 7 seeds are rarely, rarely competitive and shouldn't be there. They've gummed it up by adding 2 more teams to do a play-in tournament to get to what is ultimately a similar result anyway. The teams that kind of on the back end of that still get in often are not truly competitive, albeit last year there was a shot Steph Curry was going to get in off of a play-in tournament. And the Wizards, obviously, you'll recall, were part of that as well last year. So is it too much there? Yeah, it feels like it. You know, people don't seem to overly complain about it, but there's too much there. In hockey, there's 16 teams, and I don't feel like there's too much. In any given year, the 8 seed is extremely competitive. They're topsy-turvy. Every series is upside down. You never know what's going to happen. Baseball, added extra wild card teams, and I don't think there's a problem there. It may have devalued a way too long regular season anyway, but when the playoffs roll around, it doesn't feel like that there's anybody there who shouldn't be there. What Jerry's asking today is, are there teams that are getting in that really shouldn't be there, and does it devalue all of this? And he started his piece by saying, let's stop with the super wildcard weekend nonsense. No amount of clever NFL marketing could make the oversaturated start to this postseason more palatable. In the second year of the expansion from 12 to 14 playoff teams, more competition did nothing but accentuate a lack of competition. This tournament may end up being incredible, but its 3-day opening act could not have been less gripping. 4 of the 6 games were clear blowouts early, with halftime scores of 27-3, 17-0, 21-7, and 21-0. In the 2 close games, you'll remember the inadvertent whistle during the Bengals-Raiders and the late-game debacle during the Cowboys-49ers, as much as the playmakers who made the difference. And it was hard to marvel at the dominant performances of the teams that advanced because several of them suffered injuries that could diminish their championship hopes. That's some ancillary things that are outside of the point of his piece. But, he goes on to say this, lopsided results happen, of course. Kyler Murray isn't the first young quarterback to fall apart in his playoff debut. Bill Belichick was probably due for a big game beatdown. Okay, those 2 teams were in the playoffs. So I'm not sure. I agree and disagree with him all at the same time. I had a similar feeling like maybe this is a bit too much, that the 7th team might be a bit too much. Am I against 2 byes? No, I actually think it's better off that they're at 1 bye because too many teams are resting people at the end of the year. If you are playing for playoff positioning or that one singular bye is in play, week 18 will at least get competitive games. And oftentimes we're not getting that, especially in division games. So I think that structure is actually better. To get there, they added an extra team. The question is that extra team worth it? If his point is Kyler Murray sucked and Bill Belichick got beat down, I'm not exactly sure what his point is, because what, you didn't want Kyler Murray in the playoffs, or you don't think Bill Belichick's one of the greatest coaches of all time, and with a rookie quarterback, let's just see how it goes. Yeah, the results are the results, but that doesn't mean they didn't belong there or that wasn't must-see TV. Who didn't want to see Kyler Murray's debut last night, even though they were routed, and who didn't want to see Belichick as he went up against Buffalo, a team he had beat earlier in the year in that stadium with the rookie quarterback? So I disagree with that premise. That said, the 2 games he's talking about specifically, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia were in those games. Ben Roethlisberger is by far done. In Philadelphia, you know, I talked about this a lot here. I didn't think they were really a playoff team. I think that they were just the recipient of an invitation that probably didn't belong, to his point, really to anybody this year. Go look at Philadelphia's record against the good teams. It was terrible. Go look at it against the bad teams. It was great. And their record is their record, and they qualified to get in. But in the end, I wasn't surprised that it ended up that way. He says this: with 14 of the 32 teams qualifying for the postseason, the NFL still has a difficult playoff standard. At just 12 teams, though, it was ideal. While the expanded format allows most franchises to remain in contention deeper into the regular season, it also inspires false hope. The rewards of seizing more attention and generating more revenue do not outweigh the risk of inviting fraudulent teams to your most important party. But he does point this out as well, that last year, one of the 2-7 games happened to be the Bills and the Colts, which was one of the most memorable games of the postseason, that Buffalo won by a field goal at the end of the game. And he also described the other 2-7 game, which also was a loss by the 7 seed, as a palatable loss, because I think they lost by 10, 12 points. So you're saying two of the four that have occurred to this point have been worthwhile and had teams that were worth including, and the other two, because they happen to happen this year, makes the whole experiment not worthwhile. I don't totally disagree with him here. Not 100%, I don't totally disagree with him here. But I would say if two of the four ended up being extremely competitive games, then I don't know how you can come to the conclusion that it's been expanded too far. But that's just me. Maybe I'm wrong about that. That said, Philadelphia getting in as a 7 seed this year, they didn't feel like a playoff team to me. Pittsburgh getting in this year had everything to do with their defense, and also everything to do with an offense that just kind of pieced it together and also probably didn't belong. And they both got routed by, guess what? The teams that were in the Super Bowl last year. That ain't going to happen every time. Anyway. All right. That'll do it for today. We'll see you tomorrow at 3. Ray Weiss, the show, ESPN 630, Sports Capital.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.